hoping that you understand. You ain't the man to tell you in demand. Just pray to God we keep you in the plan. You ain't the man to tell you in it.
Hey there, welcome to Time Out with Ty. We're back again, finally, after a little bit of a hiatus, to talk NBA basketball, which is not going on right now. The Olympics are. But we'll talk about the Olympics later. Team USA is going to win. It's spoiler alert. I've seen it. I've been to the future. Team USA pulls it off miraculously for the third straight Olympics. The NBA might also be a little boring based on what one team did this summer, but it'll still be very exciting based on what a lot of other teams have done too. To talk about the biggest winners and losers of the NBA offseason, I have with me The Ringer's Jonathan Charks. I hope I pronounced that right.
That's close enough, man. I've heard it all before, so it's all good.
When I first read your name, I was like, wow, this Jonathan T. Arks guy is really good. So at least I didn't do that bad.
Ha.
I feel like winners and losers for the NBA, right? It's an obvious start. The Golden State Warriors added Kevin Durant to maybe the best regular season team ever. Maybe the biggest NBA offseason win of all time? Certainly up there.
I mean, I think I saw somewhere this is the first time that two MVPs under 30 have played together before, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I know I've seen a lot of stuff written and said on podcasts, like this is the first time like four top 20 players have all been on the same team. That's another one. That's super obviously unprecedented. I mean, I think somebody brought up like the 60s Celtics maybe did, or some team from, you know, decades and decades ago. But in the modern NBA, this is probably the best team we've ever seen assembled. Do you think there's going to be competition, or do you think that they won the season by also winning the offseason?
I mean, it's so subjective to say like top 20, especially in a sport like basketball where it's all about roles. Like, who knows if Klay played with Durant and Steph his whole career, whether he'd be seen as a top 20 player because he never get the ball very much, right? I think the main thing about the Warriors is the three-point shooting. I mean, that's what I think is unprecedented to me, is having three guys who are that good as shooters that far away from the basket on the same team. And that's kind of like what's new about them. And so they might, like, in that sense, kind of redefine elite basketball. And I guess that's what's cool to watch this year more than anything, is just, have we ever seen a team with this much shooting before? I don't think so.
No, I mean, and you bring up a good point. I mean, the numbers, maybe there's other teams that are up there. I'm not even sure if there are. The raw shooting numbers, there certainly aren't, like the raw made threes. And percentages, maybe there's teams that have been, maybe there's been teams that have will be as efficient as the Warriors. I don't really think so. But like you said, though, the range. I mean, obviously Steph, we've all seen, he'll make shots from the tunnel. If they counted during the games, he'd probably try to take those like during actual NBA minutes. Kevin Durant, too, can pull up from anywhere. That Rucker Park video is one of my favorites ever. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah, I've seen that.
That's such a fun video. That's going to be pretty much like watching the Warriors for 82 games next season, minus the rest. Like, it's going to be two guys that can do that, and really three. Klay can pull up from pretty much anywhere.
Yeah.
Draymond's a good shooter. He's not like the other three, obviously, but for a guy who can also play center, he's pretty damn good. You still have Iguodala, who's not a great shooter, but very good at everything else.
I mean, I think it'll come down to Draymond. He's really the key to this team now. Because with Steph, Klay, and KD, it's a little redundant what they all do. But and like, so one of them goes down, the other two can step up. But really, Draymond, especially with Bogut gone, is going to be so much more important to this team. Because I don't think people realize the drop-off from Bogut to Zaza that's going to be. And we saw how important Bogut was to this team in this year's playoffs. Just when he missed those last three games in the finals, and their like interior defense fell apart. Like, he was without him, they would have lost the Thunder series for sure. And Zaza's just not that kind of. I watched Zaza all year in Dallas. He's just like a very, very poor man's Bogut. If Bogut could not protect the rim, and was less couldn't roll, Bogut couldn't jump or protect the rim, he'd be Zaza. That's a really big drop for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think Zaza is, like, as far as someone who I think I've seen jump, like, maybe three times over his Milwaukee tenure, a good defender, but like you said, not a good rim protector. He doesn't elevate. He can't. So he plays good, you want to, like, I guess, one-on-one defense. He plays good help defense, but he can't protect the rim anywhere near what Bogut can do. Bogut, outstanding defender. And as much as people love to write him off, you know, oh, they don't need Bogut, it's whatever. He scores 4 points in the first five games. Like, that's not what they need him to do, but they do need him. They did need him. That's the thing about adding someone like Kevin Durant. Like, they're going to have to make very interesting sacrifices. Like, they won't be able to keep these four for a long time.
I think the cap works out. They can. I don't know the exact numbers.
Do you really? I feel like, will they be able to, like, field a real team, though?
Well, I mean, to me, it's just, can they find a shot blocker? Can they find somebody who can protect the rim? Because you got to figure they'll play the Cavs again in the finals. And then LeBron's going to try the same thing he tried last year, just get in the front of the rim, having Tristan Thompson get rebounds and try to control tempo as much as possible. That'll work, I don't know, with this team. But I would say, like, it's hard for me to see any team but the Cavs beating them. And I think the Cavs have to get a lot better. But there are probably scenarios where the Cavs still could possibly beat them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just hard to say that LeBron can't do anything after these last finals, where he literally did everything. Led to both teams in all stat categories, and obviously won. This is just such a different animal, though. I mean, like, who do you guard first, Steph Curry or Kevin Durant? Probably Kevin Durant. But then you're worrying about Stephen Curry second? Like, that idea just seems ludicrous.
Yeah, and then it's all about, I guess you're just switching every screen. I guess LeBron can, now he really can't guard KD either. I mean, no one can guard, that's the thing, no one can guard Kevin Durant. He's probably the most unguardable one-on-one player in the league.
Maybe ever.
And Steph's probably two. So, they're definitely the heavy favorites, but it'll be fun to watch him at least for his first year and just see. I think the Cavs will probably have to, I don't know, figure out how to use Kevin Love better. They'll have to maximize their roster a lot more than they used this year.
Yeah, this year it felt, especially during the regular season, they coasted for a while. And then they sort of just figured it out as they went on in the playoffs and especially the finals. The one thing for me about Golden State is the one reason besides just LeBron doing LeBron shit that I see them not winning the finals this year is that adjustment period like we saw with the Heatles the first year that Wade Bosch and LeBron got together. Like, I could definitely see a sort of too many cooks in the kitchen scenario, and the Warriors have been really, really good about, you know, being humble is certainly not the right word, but they didn't really feature anyone. Like, if Steph didn't get the ball for a while and other players, like Clay was hot, Steph's not mad about that. Steph's all for that. That works for them. Kevin Durant has sort of an odd personality, especially with all the Russell Westbrook stuff that's been coming out lately. I could see there being weirdness, at least for the first year.
I could see, I mean, maybe more like LaMarcus and DeSantonio, where you have a guy used to a ball-stopping offense, and he kind of has to adjust to a more free-flowing offense. But he did, I mean, like, playing with Russell Westbrook, that does make you more comfortable playing off the ball. It isn't like Durant's not used to not getting the ball for stretches of the game. And I think you'll see a lot of, they'll have either Steph or Durant in the court the entire game, which is pretty crazy to think about. Like, I can't imagine they'll play many minutes without one of those two guys on the floor.
Yeah, I'd never really thought about how they're going to stagger it until you said that, but Jesus. They could, yeah, whoever they take out first, just leave the other one. Wow. That's unfair. Like, against B-team defenders are going to have to go up against either Steph or Kevin Durant.
Yeah, and the big difference with the Heat is the first 2 years, none of them shot threes. Yeah. So there was much more adjustment. When you can space the floor enough, the game becomes really easy. There's just not, and I really think what maybe the biggest addition with Durant is on defense. Because you saw that what Durant could do against Draymond in those conference finals. He pretty much completely shut Draymond down. And Draymond had 32 points and like 15 boards in game 7 or something. Yeah. And he was getting like 5 points a game on Durant. So when you have Durant and Draymond on defense, that would be the real push. I mean, the more I think about it, the Warriors should win the championship this year. I mean, I guess that's pretty obvious. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the hottest take you've maybe ever dropped. But it is, I mean, it's worth saying because it's, you know, it's what's facing us for this next season. And this always happens. I always want to talk about so many things and then the Warriors come up and it just dominates because, and this has been two and a half years now because, I mean, they're the Warriors. They're the most fascinating team. Let's talk about some other winners and losers though. This is one we briefly mentioned before we started recording. You have the Oklahoma City Thunder as a loser and that's fair. They lost Kevin Durant. so it's hard to say they didn't, like, they're not a loser for the offseason, but I low-key liked how they handled losing Kevin Durant. Like, I think they've had probably the best possible offseason for any team that loses a Kevin Durant caliber player.
I mean, I think they have, at least they have an identity now. Like, leaving without Durant, it'll be the Westbrook-Adams pick and roll, and they can build off there. The question to me is just, do they have enough shooting, and do they have enough defense around those two guys? Can the rest of their pieces fit into place around them? And that, to me, is the unknown.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be, I mean, Oladipo is, everyone likes Oladipo, I feel like, but he's not proven that he can do defense or shooting yet. Like, he showed signs. I don't have the number on me, but I think he was a almost passable three-point shooter. I think he broke 30%.
He was 35% this year.
So, yeah, he was fine. Fine. But clearly they need a small forward, which, yeah, when you lose Kevin Durant, there's probably a hole going to be left at small forward. But you look at Westbrook, Oladipo, you know, whoever they're putting there, probably Roberson. Power forward, it'll probably be, what, Ersan right now. And then
yeah, he'll start. And Ennis would be the sixth man, I would think.
Yeah, they like that for Ennis, who is really weird story with Ennis Cantor today.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Did you know what his letter said? Like, I saw he tweeted it, but it was in Turkish, and I do not read Turkish.
No, I don't know much about it beyond the connections at Coup this summer. I mean, I don't really know much about Turkish politics.
Yeah, we should probably avoid Turkish politics in this NBA podcast. But it was a very interesting story. If you want to know more about it, just Google Ennis Cantor. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I like their team. I really like Adams. I think Ennis is fine as a six man. Everyone knows he can't play defense, but if you just bring him in to rebound the shit out of the boards and score against second units, I think he's fine. I really like Oladipo. I thought the Ibaka trade was a steal for the Thunder.
I mean, the one thing I wonder is just, like, it's the same question with them that's been for a while, is do you have enough guys who can shoot and play defense at the same time?
Yeah.
And Ibaka was the one guy, really it was Ibaka and Durant were the two guys who could do both. So, like, you got all these big men. You got Sabonis, McGarry, Cantor. Can they guard and shoot? And then on the wings, you've got guys who can guard like Roberson, guys who can shoot like Payne, Abrines. Can they do both? Do they have enough two-way players next to Russ and Adams? And I think that's what it'll come down to for them. All these young guys, can they not even just be great players, just be good two-way players, just improve their games in certain capacities?
Were you surprised that Westbrook stuck around?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I figured before it all started, you would think that whatever KD would do, Westbrook would do too, just because without KD, obviously it's a much less appealing team. But I mean, at the same time, he's getting paid a ton of money. He's always kind of been his own, a very unique march to his own drum kind of guy. So it's not stunning. I mean, I guess I'm pretty surprised, but it's not, I wouldn't say it was stunning either.
I mean, it feels like it made so much sense for him to not stay, like, in the immediate aftermath. I mean, every time something like this happens where someone's rumored to be available, like, it's been Boogie Cousins for, like, 5 years now. It's all the typical suspects get trotted out in the trade rumors, you know. He could go to Boston and play with Horford and them, or he could go to Los Angeles to lead that young core, or stuff like that. But, I mean, you really think about it, Westbrook, and I've read a lot about this lately, I find the whole, like, Westbrook versus KD personality thing to be just fascinating, and there's been a lot of good pieces on it. But Westbrook is totally the kind of guy who's just going to say F you everybody and go out and just try to dominate Kevin Durant and the Warriors when they play. And, like, I don't think his team will win many games against the Warriors, but I think he'll probably look pretty damn good in those games because, I mean, he's Russell Westbrook. He's obviously incredible. But he just seems like the kind of guy, and obviously I don't know Russell Westbrook. I've never talked to Russell Westbrook. But from, like, the way he plays and all the interview quotes and everything, maybe in retrospect it shouldn't have been so surprising that he wanted to stick around and sort of prove everybody wrong. I mean, he has an okay situation to do it. They still lost this offseason, but after, like, outside of losing KD, I think they won.
I mean, that's fair. To me, the guys to watch on that team, I guess there's a lot of guys to watch. There's so many young guys, but obviously Adams. We know who Cantor is. I think the big long-term pieces, it's Sabonis and Payne. Those are your two lottery picks. Those are guys with some two-way potential. And, like, how good can those two guys be? How quickly? And if they can really – the Thunder have always been a good drafting franchise. If they can get those two guys going, there's a lot of talent there. If they can't, it might be kind of a tough slog. But can Sabonis – he was a great center in college. Can he be a college – and can he be an NBA power forward? Can he shoot the ball? He was mostly an interior guy in college. Can he step out and shoot jumpers? Then you got Payne. Is he big enough to guard in the NBA? He looked good in like a little minutes he played last year. But can he run the offense without Russ in the game? Can he play off the ball with Russ? Can he guard point guards and move Russ off the ball on defense? Those, I think, are the two guys long-term. You have to figure out what they have.
I would certainly agree with that. Figuring out how him and Russ play together, I think, is going to be super important for them. Because OKC has, like, it's like they have good guards, and they have good big men, and they just have nothing in the middle. So figuring out how to play the guards and the big men simultaneously, like multiples of each, is going to be one of the biggest things for Billy Donovan this next season. I mean, they can balance their roster better, like, next summer, so it might not be a big thing forever. But certainly this year, they're going to have to figure out how to play, like, can we play Campaign, Russell Westbrook, and Oladipo in really small lineups at times? With two big guys, maybe. Who knows? They're going to have to do stuff like that because they just do not have that much depth at the forward position. I like Roberson. He can't shoot, which means it's really easy to dislike him. But I just really like what he brings. He's a really good defender. He plays big. He's got a ridiculous wingspan. And I feel like it's easier to find him places because of his defense, and he's a good slasher and all that. But I don't know if he... I don't know if he should ever start on a very good team. I mean, maybe if you slot him with another wing who can really shoot at small forward. I'm just not sure. I do like him, though, on the team. I think he's going to add a lot to them in terms of defense.
Yeah, the problem is you're just playing Russ, Roberson, and Adams together, and since none of them can shoot threes.
Yeah.
They really found a role for him in those playoffs last year when they were playing him as the screener with Durant and Ibaka at the 4 and 5, and he was the one non-shooter. But that's the thing is those two guys are the glue for their lineups, KD and Serge. They kind of fit together a lot of ill-fitting parts with their shooting and defense. And so on a talent perspective, I think OKC could still be a top 5 or 6 team in the West. It's just, can they find the right lineups?
Yeah, that'll be the challenge. It's a lot of square pegs for round holes right now.
Yeah, basically.
What about the Spurs? Did they win? I guess they lost because Tim Duncan retired. I'm trying to figure out what teams are really going to be up there in the West now. I mean, the Clippers probably will. But, like, who's going to be that third seed and that fourth seed? I feel like I feel like it should be the Spurs.
Yeah, I mean, even the Spurs, they won 67 games and had the second best differential in the league. So even if they, like, come back to earth without Tim Duncan, they'll still be really good, you would think. And I don't really love the Powell and David Lee additions. But my guess is this doesn't get exposed until the playoffs when you can really game plan for their lack of speed on defense. I expect it to be the top three to be Golden State, San Antonio, Clippers. And then I got the Jazz probably as the team that moves up to the 4-5-3 range.
Yeah, I would say, I don't know, it's hard to put winning or losing label on the Spurs. They kind of just always exist, like they just stay winning. The Jazz certainly, though, won. They got... George Hill, which is, I almost said Jeff Teague at first. They got George Hill, which for them, for what, 2 years now, the number one thing has been like the Jazz are stacked at every single position except point guard. And they finally went out and got one. And Dante Exum is fine. He's been hurt, but I think he's going to be fine. Trey Burke, not so fine. But George Hill, I mean, is proven. He's incredible. And I think he really takes this from like, you know, a young, fun team to watch, you know, they're 2 years away from being good, to all of a sudden people looking around, and we're not the only ones saying this, and saying there's nothing stopping the Jazz from getting home court in the playoffs. Like, Derek Favors is phenomenal. Rudy Gobert, one of the best defensive centers in the NBA, if not the best. He might be the best. Gordon Hayward is forever criminally underrated scorer. And then you got Alec Burks, who I really like. And they also have Rodney Hood, who I really like. Like, they just have so many really good pieces that feel like they fit together very well.
Yeah, absolutely. I was like, they have a lot of room for internal improvement, which I always like coming into a season. And they've added three vets who can kind of fill in the pieces for them. They didn't close games very well last year. And they've got two guys in Johnson and Hill who can guard multiple positions and spread the floor and create, and I guess Johnson really more than Hill can create shots late in the clock. Like, to me, they are kind of the blueprint for the new model team in the NBA. They got guys at every position who can guard multiple spots. Now they have a lot more shooting. I mean, I think those guys to me are a big, I really like the Jazz, long story short.
Yeah. I feel like I'm hoping the Milwaukee Bucks end up as one of those teams, as a Bucks fan from Milwaukee. How do you feel about their summer and sort of their sort of look going forward?
I like what they're doing, moving everything around Giannis. I think last year, having MCW and Monroe holding the ball, there are just too many cooks in the kitchen. Kind of messed with what really worked for them. So this year's team, bring in Dele especially. He'll play off the ball. So they'll go Dellavedova right, mm-hmm. Giannis, Jabari, Middleton, Plumlee.
That's the biggest thing is, like, for Bucks people, it's like this ongoing joke. Like, will John Henson ever get a chance to start? I'm really not sure. I mean, they still have to get rid of Monroe. I don't know if, I don't know if they'll start him if he's still here, or if they'll just
Think there's any way they start him at this point. They've been shopping for nothing.
I feel like they probably could have dumped him, like, for literally nothing at some point. Like, I feel like that would have been possible, but they didn't because they wanted something. And this is speculation, but I feel like, Dallas, before they got Bogut, needed someone super bad. Like, I feel like certainly Dallas would have said, yes, please, we'll take Greg Monroe for free.
I don't know. I mean, how we ever play Greg Monroe and Dirk together?
Like, that's true.
How many teams really need Monroe's? If anything, there are a lot of teams trying to dump guys like Monroe. Like, Vucevic is probably available for very little. We know Jaleel's out there. Jefferson's a backup big man now. Like, those... I mean, Brook Lopez is definitely out there in the market. Those kind of like old school low post scoring bigs who don't move their feet very well. There's not a huge demand for them, especially at Monroe's salary. It's, you know, the worm turns quick in this league, and I don't know where he's going to go next year and how much money he's going to make.
Do you think
that does he have a player option next year?
Yeah, he does. Player.
I mean, he might just, I don't know if he doesn't just take it, keep the money.
I feel like he'd still get paid by someone. Like, I think clearly, like, the league is shifting away from that player type. And I think it was Zach Lowe who wrote about this earlier and about how all of these guys, like Cantor, Monroe, Vucevic, are going to look at bench minutes next year, not being starters. Al Jefferson, too. I love that contract, though. That was a great deal by the Pacers. But I just feel like there's, like, going to be a team that bites. Like, some team is going to go, you know, we need to add someone, if nothing else, just to impress our fans. Greg Monroe is a big name. He is good at what he does, to be fair to Greg Monroe. It just doesn't fit in well with most teams. Let's add him. Like, I feel like he'd still get a contract. I mean, Mozgov got 4 years, $64 million, for Christ's sake. I feel like Monroe should get something. But, I mean, you could be right. Like, I don't know what team really, like, what specific team says we need Greg Monroe.
The one team that might make sense is New Orleans. He's from there. And you can play him with Davis, and he can kind of spread the floor with Monroe and then block shots. Yeah. Like, maybe that could make sense.
They do like him. They have expressed interest in him in the past.
I mean, they'd probably trade Asik for him if you want to just dump contracts.
I mean, I feel like Asik probably makes more sense for the Bucks than Monroe. I don't think he's very good, but, I mean, he's expensive, obviously, but I think he'd at least fit in better with what the Bucks want to do.
That'd be a lot of money for three centers who just roll to the rim.
That's the thing right now about it is you look at next year and three of the four highest paid Bucks are centers. And their highest paid position group is centers. And none of them are within the most, like, the three more important players on the team. So the salary is very odd right now. Like, they need to figure a lot of things out before Giannis gets his extension and then Jabari gets his a year later. Because you're looking at luxury tax every year. Like, I don't know about this Plumlee contract. I like Plumlee, but I feel like that was probably too much for Miles Plumlee.
I guess it just depends on the role they have slated for him. They figure if he's going to play, I don't know, 25, 30 minutes a night as a center. Yeah, it'll be tough to see how Henson fits into this, too. Henson, I'd assume they'd want to go Plumlee, Henson as your centers, and it's like Monroe is, I don't know what they're going to do. Maybe Henson's the odd man out. It's a lot of money tied in. You're right about that.
I feel like if they'll just look like, and I don't want to, you know, disparage my team, but they'll look stupid, I think, if they have Monroe on the roster for opening night. Like, the money they're paying to all three of those guys, how awkward it's been. Like, he didn't get an exit interview. Like, everybody besides the second-round picks from 2 years ago who got cut got an exit interview. Like, everyone did. Plumlee got one because they talked about how much they wanted to re-sign him the whole time. Greg Monroe, no exit interview. And the funniest slash most awkward part of it was Michael Carter-Williams was at one of the Vegas games during Summer League, and they asked him, oh, what about Greg Monroe? And his answer was something along the lines of, as far as I know, he is a player on this team, or like a member of this team. Like, it was not at all an endorsement. It sounded like he was trying to like do some legal language there and not get tied into anything. And then they sort of just dropped it and moved on. It's just so awkward, and the fit is horrible. The money is bad. Like, find somewhere to put him. I really thought Portland might have been an option because Portland's wanted him for a while for some reason. But now they have way too much money tied up.
Yeah, I don't know that there's – I guess there's always – he doesn't have Falk as his agent. I mean, maybe he can scram something together. I don't know.
It's not looking good. Like, I feel like their upside should be great, but he's just, like, there. Like, I really liked what Giannis did after the All-Star break last season. I think Chris Middleton played at a near All-Star level. He's not established enough to actually get the spot right now, but I think he might be if he has another year like he had last year. And Jabari's coming along. Like, I still think Jabari's going to be good. They just need, like, their center to get the hell out of the way. Like, they can't have someone clog up the paint. That's why Henson and Plumlee, especially Plumlee, who is a much better rim runner than I thought. That guy can finish an alley-oop from almost anywhere. Like, those guys play so well with them because they get out of the way. Monroe just takes up too much space for this team.
Yeah, that'll be the question, is can they fit? And I think that'll be a question for all these teams in the East. It's just, can they fit the pieces together? Because there's not much ground. You look at it like, only Brooklyn and Philly are out of the playoffs right now. Everybody else is thinking playoffs. So that's 13 teams for 8 spots. And those last 6, I mean, after like the 3rd or 4th seed, anything can go. So it's all about finding the right pieces and getting them going at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, obviously, Cleveland will be the first seed, barring anything really dramatic. I mean, hey, technically LeBron hasn't signed yet, but he will. Then I'm guessing it's going to be some sort of mix of Boston and Toronto. I mean, I really did not like Toronto's offseason, but they still have their two most important players. They didn't lose everybody. It just kind of feels like it. I mean, they're good. They're going to be good still. Boston obviously added Al Horford to what they had, so they're going to be good. But after that, I mean, you have, like, I like the Pacers offseason, but it still feels like they're a move away. Like, it feels like they need to get rid of Monte Ellis at some point. I don't know anything about what the Bulls and Knicks are going to do. I feel like those teams have maybe, like, the widest variance. The Bulls and Knicks. Like, I feel like if it works out, all the talented players both of those teams have, like, if it worked out really well, either of them could be good, but I feel like it could also flame out horribly for either of them, too.
Yeah, I just sent an article, like, the 5 most unpredictable teams in the league. This year, I had the Knicks on it. But the Bulls, I'm not even sure they're unpredictable. I don't understand how that could possibly work. Wade and Rondo and Jimmy. None of them shoot threes. Wade and Rondo hold the ball constantly. There's going to be no space in the floor for anyone. I just don't see how it's going to work.
Is it a stealth tank?
I mean, signing Rondo is a pretty good stealth tank move, it feels like, these days. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what they're doing anymore.
Is there a situation where Rondo doesn't make a team worse? Like, his numbers are good, and now he shoots threes. And he's not good, but he shoots threes at a fairly average clip, which is really weird. But, like, it's just, like, his plus-minus numbers, especially in Sacramento, it almost doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I guess he was holding the ball too much, and I didn't watch too much Kings basketball last year. Yeah. I think I watched him a lot in Dallas 2 years ago, and he actually played pretty good defense for the Mavs, but he just didn't fit their offense at all with Monte next to him. I think, like, if the Mavs had kept Rondo, which they were never going to do, but if they had gone Rondo, Matthews, Parsons, Dirk, big man. So Rondo's the one non-shooter, and he holds the ball most of the game. And the problem is he's just not good enough to justify holding the ball anymore most of the game. And he can't play off the ball. So he's probably a backup point guard. And that's tough with his ego and his, you know, but he plays the game. Maybe he's a backup point guard in a good team. I don't know.
Is that where Rose is at, too?
Ooh, I hope the Knicks better hope not. I mean, the Knicks have to have Rose playing well. It'll be tough because there's not a lot of space in New York.
No.
You got Noah. Melo's going to want the ball in the mid post. You got KP. Will they play small at all? I don't know. And can Rose do well in the triangle? It seems very unlikely that he's going to be a good triangle point guard. That's not really his game at all, a ball control game.
Like, a lot of people, especially fans of those teams, coincidentally, were very excited about those big moves. Like, oh, Wade to Chicago, you know, he's got the press conference, he's got the jersey. It's all very exciting. But you just look at it from, like, a basketball point of view. And, I mean, clearly, overwhelmingly from, like, the NBA writer community, I guess you could say, or NBA writers, people who write about it, were saying, like, this doesn't make all that much sense. I mean, I think the Bulls, I just feel like, have been one of the more strange front offices, like, since Jordan left, pretty much. Like, they almost traded Jimmy Butler, apparently, on draft night, which would have been just, like, a devastatingly bad move, depending on the return. The New York thing, I mean, the way a lot of people are flipping it, it's like, look, I mean, they still have Porzingis. They didn't give up much. I mean, they lost Robin Lopez, who is good, and who you wrote this today, like, they might miss him if Noah's hurt a lot, especially considering the contracts. But they didn't, like, throw away their future. They still have Porzingis. I think they started having draft picks again soon, too. So I can see where it's, like, sort of, we can try to win a little bit now and get KP some experience, and we didn't really shoot ourselves in the foot long term. Like, I see that side of it. I just don't know if it would have been better off to just, like, actually build around Porzingis.
Well, the problem is Melo's got a full no trade clause. So you really can't, unless he agrees to trade.
I mean,
you really can't rebuild unless he agrees to go.
I suppose, yeah. I mean, even if you built around the two of them, like, as a sort of, well, this is a horrible analogy, a sort of a Admiral Tim Duncan thing, but no, they were never that good in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what they're trying to do in theory, build around Melo. I mean, I like Courtney Lee. He's a pretty solid two guard for that team. And then if Noah can stay healthy and Rose can get himself back together, there's a lot of ifs, we've been saying. There's a lot of ifs. We're in the triangle this year. Noah's the perfect triangle big man, which makes me think they're in the triangle. I'd imagine if Hornacek, going with it in Phoenix, he'd want to go KP at the five, Melo at the four mostly, and spread the floor. But, you know, Noah's very much your old-school triangle big man, top of the key, elbow cuts, whatever. It's just, can Rose fit into that? Like, did Rose and Noah really make sense anymore in Chicago? It's weird they brought those two guys back together. It feels like both of them could have been better apart from each other at this point in their careers.
Yeah, like, I think they both have the potential to be, like, above-average players still. I think, really, the biggest thing for the Knicks is going to be health. Like, how many games are you getting out of Noah over there? He signed a 4-year deal, didn't he?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think, like, are you getting 60 games a year or more out of him for 4 years? Like, I don't think so. I mean, it could happen. Players have done it before, but I just don't know if those were great gambles to make. At least they only have Rose for 1 year. Like, if Rose doesn't work out, he can go do whatever he wants. But the Noah thing is, some of these contracts that got signed this summer, I mean, you can't just be afraid of the numbers because obviously there's the cap spike and everything. But still, some of these contracts have been just ludicrous.
I mean, the thing I wonder, like, on a bigger perspective, is just with this whole cap spike, that's all dependent on cable TV revenues or cable TV contracts. And cable TV is changing really fast. Like, most of my friends don't even have cable anymore. So I don't know in, like, 3 years whether those cable, that'll be sustainable, this whole business model. That's my question, really.
Yeah, like, if they go
if
to
people
a...
keep cutting the cord.
Yeah, like, if people keep streaming, like, will streaming be as revenue-generating as cable? Or will it drop?
I mean, there's no way, because cable makes money off those, like, what they call them, carriage fees, where everyone pays, like, $6 a month to ESPN. That's not going to fly on streaming or on demand.
Yeah.
Because, like, with the way it works now, every person who has cable TV gets ESPN money. And there's still plenty of folks, most folks don't watch ESPN. So if you only have a dedicated ESPN, you're just watching ESPN, I just don't see the money that being there. So people say, oh, this new contract, the new cap reality. I mean, that's true as far as it goes, but that reality can change pretty fast outside the structure of the NBA set up. This doesn't feel right to me. The level of interest in these two sports that these NBA players who just aren't that notable and making so much money. Like, I know I'm an NBA writer. I know it makes sense in the current model, but I just wonder how sustainable that model is long term.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure this is something that the NBA and especially the players' union is going to look at. What is it, next summer? Either side can opt out of this current CBA and renegotiate. Like, I'm sure, I know he's talked about it. Adam Silver wants to smooth out this cap a bit, which I don't know if you can really do that anymore because it's kind of been done already. But I'm hoping and have faith in that there won't be a lockout. But after this year, I think it is, right? Then they can opt out, and one side certainly will. And then they have to do a new CBA where who knows how many things could change.
Well, because here's the thing. It's like if you have this model where there's a bubble going on and you've set your contracts to this model of a bubble and the bubble collapses and you have all these contracts to an old model, then that mismatch, someone's taken a loss. And when someone takes a loss, it's usually pretty ugly. So I think like the NBA should be in good shape if they can figure out the transition between cable TV and streaming TV. Because my guess is in like 5, 6, 7 years, everyone's streaming everything all the time. I don't see how cable survives. I mean, I guess you have older people who watch cable. It might be like the newspaper industry, honestly.
Where it hangs on?
On older people who don't know how to check the change. And people our age, these younger people just aren't going to get cable.
Yeah.
Like, I can't see anybody, especially because people coming out of school don't have many jobs anymore. They don't have a ton of money. I can't see many 22-year-olds paying $120 a month for cable anymore.
Yeah, like I'm in college right now. I'm 21, and I've not had cable like myself ever. Like,
do any of your friends have cable anymore? College kids?
A couple. Like, one of my friends just fucking loves TV, so he gets cable, but it's not like the really nice cable. It's like the basic, not basic cable, but like the a very limited package. And I just stream everything. Like, I have League Pass, but it's like,
totally,
is League Pass going to be enough to pay for, you know, these contracts? Maybe not.
I mean, there's no way. That's the question the NBA has to figure out, I think. And they have to figure it out probably faster than they'd like. And I that's what I worry about long term. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. I didn't expect us to get to this doom and gloom look at the future of the NBA salary, but I'm glad we did. I haven't heard much spoken about like that particular aspect, like cable versus streaming before. In that sense, but it's definitely going to be very interesting going forward. I think it'll take cable a little longer to die. Like baby boomers, like people my dad's age. Like, I don't know, my dad streams stuff too sometimes, though.
Yeah, it's what we've been talking about. It's not so much dying as it is like
stagnating.
Yeah, and just declining and going into like a. With newspapers, they're still around now, but every year they're shrinking their industry, shrinking costs. And I could see the same thing with cable. I could see ESPN TNT in 3 years being like, we've made a huge mistake. We cannot afford these contracts. And from there, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Do you think we're going to see amnesties in the new CBA again?
Probably. I'd imagine so. That you would think that's a win-win for everyone, basically.
Yeah, I mean, the players still get paid. It just doesn't count against the cap anymore. Like, I feel like if the cap drops, if something happens, like, what do the Rockets do with Ryan Anderson's 4-year, $80 million contract? Like, that becomes untenable if the cap stops moving and stops going, especially if it shrinks at all. $20 million for Ryan Anderson 3 years from now?
Well, I mean, he's gonna be their starting four, man. It's just going to be interesting to see what it's going to look like starting a team with Anderson at the four in the West.
Yeah. I mean, their defense is, the Rockets is maybe the only thing more depressing for me than the cap situation going forward. I'm not excited.
I think they'll be fun to watch. Like, you think of like your classic Mike D'Antoni spread pick and roll team. Like, how do you guard? It'll be hard to guard them.
Yeah.
Whether they'll stop anybody, I have no idea. But so you have Harden, Capella pick and rolls, and then Gordon Anderson space on the floor. Like, Harden should have a big year. I don't know if they'll play enough defense to be good, but they'll win their home games, get in the playoffs probably. I don't know.
Yeah, they'll be 7th or 8th or so. There's a lot of fun teams to talk about. Unfortunately, we can't cover them all because it would just take hours and hours and hours, and we don't have that kind of time. Is there any last-minute NBA things you wanted to share before we get going, though? Any hot takes we didn't get to? Any winners or losers we didn't cover at all that you had on your mind?
I'm living a take-free summer, man. Get back to me in the fall, I guess. I don't know.
All right, I'll get back to you in the fall. Hopefully you'll have some at least moderate takes. For everyone, before we take off here, go check out Joey Burbs, who does the intro and outro music to this podcast. At Joey Burbs, joeyburbs.com, Google Joey Burbs, it's all over. Also, check out The Ringer. It's the best site right now if you want to read articles. You guys post an insane amount of really, really good articles, and it's very nice for me because in the post-Grantland, pre-Ringer world, I just sort of felt lost. And now I have things to read when I'm sitting on the toilet, which is very, very nice. So thank you for that.
There's some strong words right there. I like it.
I do what I can. Jonathan, thanks for coming on.
And I'll probably have a good one.
Yeah, you too, man.